looking ahead to the holidays of the future. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. Incorporating technology into the holidays is not necessarily a new idea.
Now, there's a gift that would come in handy on Christmas morning. A Westinghouse automatic coffee maker.
That's from 1949, but this hour we look ahead to the year 2030, dreaming about how we might shop, maybe with new smart purses.
When you have the bag with you, it connects to your phone to tell you, hey, you know, while you're in this store, I might want to recommend the following.
And thinking about how our devices could track what we eat.
People are looking at developing a smart toilet, right, that would constantly be tracking your body's output as a way of tracking your health.
But also figuring out how to keep tech from coming between us.
You know, my wife and I will sit on the couch and tweet together at each other while we're sitting on the couch.
The holidays of the future, all this hour on Marketplace Tech. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome to our special and super-sized episode where we're thinking about the holidays of the future. Not the 2017 future, but to pick a slightly arbitrary date, the future of 2030. Over the next hour, we're going to explore beloved holiday traditions and talk about how tech might change them by the year 2030. Travel, food, entertaining, charitable giving, gift giving. We'll explore it all with a series of futurists and experts and hopefully discover what we really love about the holidays along the way. Up first, one of my all-time ever favorite topics and a key part of any celebration, holiday or otherwise, food. Eating it and cooking it, because that is half the fun of meals during the holidays for, you know, some of us. And whenever I want to talk food, I have a go-to buddy to chat about recipe ideas and how much to make and whether a cheese plate can really be too big. That's my friend, Christine Fernandez.
Hello.
Christine.
Yes.
It's Molly. You probably can't even tell because I sound terrible.
It is you.
Hi.
All right. Once I recovered, I asked Christine what she likes about holiday cooking and what she hopes stays the same.
I feel like the prep, you know, usually, so for the, I've hosted Thanksgiving for the past 6 years. My mom flies up early and we spend, I'd say, a good day and a half doing just the prep, yep. Chopping, you know, making what we can in advance, making the broth. And that's like such a nice experience. You know, I feel like if holiday cooking becomes too Insta, you would lose that. It's part of the togetherness
yeah.
time.
Yeah, no Chopbot.
Yeah, no Chopbot or, you know, like the Jetsons, push a button and your meal just arrives. Like there, I love cooking. I love the people part of cooking too, you know?
So how close are we to that Jetsons kitchen of the future? And could people like Christine avoid it? Well, I mean, she may be able to avoid the Chopbot, although for others, the theme here is convenience and being able to spend time during the holidays exactly the way you want to. That is not a new idea.
Now, there's a gift that will come in handy on Christmas morning, a Westinghouse automatic coffee maker. There's no watching, no stirring. It brings your coffee to the very peak of its flavor. Then it automatically keeps the coffee piping hot as long as you want it.
That was from 1949. These days, we've moved from automated coffee machines to Wi-Fi-enabled coffee machines that brew auto-magically or even keep tabs on the sort of coffee brands you like and maybe down the road could just order refills for you. You know, the sort of device you'd see in a smart kitchen. Rebecca Chesney is the research director of the Food Futures Lab, which is part of the Institute for the Future, a think tank. And no, smart kitchens don't necessarily look like the Jetsons. Instead, Rebecca says they'll probably be a little more subtle on the outside, at least.
I think it's most likely going to look like, you know, the ways that our phones have transformed from being devices that we use to just make a phone call to now they are devices where we can receive images and videos. They connect us to lots of different aspects of the broader world. And I actually imagine that the smart kitchen will look in a lot of ways the same, but this kind of digital layer, this information layer on top of our food, on top of recipes and cooking and how we connect socially, that's where mm-hmm. I think that we'll actually see some of these technologies on that time frame of the next, you know, 10, 15, 20 years.
Can you give me some examples? Do you mean like a smart kitchen that sort of wouldn't let me screw up the turkey or a refrigerator that might say, oh, hey, you need celery, which I always
need. I never buy celery. I always forget that part.
Never have enough celery.
Could my fridge just like help me out with that?
Sure. Well, that's actually, you know, one of the things that's being developed is, you know, the embedding of our technologies like a refrigerator with lots of different kinds of sensors and cameras that can see what's inside of your fridge, potentially even read the labels on the packages in your fridge. So like the sell by or the expiration date on your milk carton, to help you keep track of the inventory in your kitchen and to help keep track of what's about to go bad. You asked about the turkey, and this is kind of an interesting thought. Some of the technologies that are being created today are things like these ovens that are designed with a variety of AI and machine learning technologies. So these ovens can tell, you know, the moisture level in the chicken or the turkey that you're roasting. There's a lot of pressure around making sure the turkey is perfect. And there even is, you know, the butterball turkey hotline where you can call in and get help with your turkey.
Totally.
So actually, that might be an interesting use case for some of these technologies is when there's a lot of pressure around having the best turkey for Thanksgiving, then you might actually really take advantage of these technologies that are being built to help you achieve that perfect result.
Well, then let's talk about the food itself, because obviously there are aspects of that that could go into the food. But are there trends that you see coming up right now that you think could affect maybe what we're eating in 2030 or how we're eating? You know, I'm thinking most simply of lab-grown protein or whether we'll be serving a bunch of algae in 2030 because meat is so inefficient.
For me, I do imagine that it's very likely. I could picture that by 2030, somewhere in the United States, there might be a family that has some level of lab-grown meat at their Thanksgiving table. The price is going down. The availability will potentially be there for some people. And then what's kind of interesting to think about is, would that even look like a turkey, a whole turkey, or would it be 10 turkey breasts? Because whenever you're growing in a lab, you actually have that capability of even deciding we're going to grow individual parts, which, you know, I know for some, it might sound a little bit kind of science fiction-y, but, you know, that's really what that would allow.
I think only legs would be, we'd choose only legs.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a dark meat person.
What do you think are, you know, as you look across this landscape and if you had to name two or three of the, what you think will be the most sort of impactful food trends, either, you know, in terms of devices or actual food, what do you think those might be?
In terms of devices, people are focusing on using pretty cutting edge technologies for things like traceability across the food system. So this idea of knowing not just where your food came from, but the process it went through and how it traveled to get to you, all the way to how does this food interact with my body?
Can you give us a specific example? Is our fridge watching us or is it the toilet?
Maybe even the toilet. Exactly. I mean, there's people are looking at developing a smart toilet, right? That would constantly be tracking your body's output as a way of tracking your health. Today, we think of all of these devices and appliances in our homes as discrete objects. If you think on this longer term horizon, all of these different discrete physical objects will be, you know, connected to the internet. They'll be embedded with different levels of intelligence. But more than that, they're going to be connected to each other and connected to this larger ecosystem.
That's Rebecca Chesney, the research director of the Food Futures Lab. And speaking of growing meat in a lab, there is at least one startup that is already doing that. Memphis Meats is a company that's using animal cells to create meat. The idea is we could eat meat without needing to raise and slaughter actual animals. We visited their lab in Fremont, California.
My name is Morgan Reese. I'm the formulation scientist here at Memphis Meats. Right now, what I'm working on is I'm looking at some more chicken nugget type products. I'm going to turn on my pan. I'm taking one of our chicken samples and I'm putting it into my really hot pan. So you can kind of smell it already. I'm just trying to get that nice brown color on the outside, make sure it cooks all the way through. And that one looks good to me, so I'm going to pull this one out. And we're just going to cut it open and just take a look at the inside. It looks super juicy. Tastes like chicken.
All right, what do you think? Does it really taste like chicken?
Have you tried lab-grown meat, or are you sticking with traditional turkey? Maybe you're a tofurkey kind of person. Let us know and tell us the food innovation you are craving most at mptech@marketplace.org. I'm Molly Wood. This is Marketplace Tech's look at the holidays of the future. And some people have absolutely no plans to cook this holiday or any holiday. For those folks, there's Deliveroo. No, you're right. Deliveroo is not from the future, but it is becoming pretty darn convenient, especially if you live in a city and you have an app. The consulting firm McKinsey values the delivery app market at over $100 billion worldwide. In the U.S., delivery titan Grubhub is joined by Uber Eats and Amazon. So there are a lot of ways to order food. And yes, people do get delivery during the holidays.
I don't think I've ever made that much money in a short duration, meaning four-hour shift. I think I cleared nearly $200.
That's John Galley, who delivers food for the app DoorDash. He worked during the holidays last year, and it was pretty good for him.
I'm like a lot of people in the Bay Area. I'm a transplant. I just don't have the ability to get up and fly all the way to Central Illinois, where I'm originally from. So yeah, I DoorDash during the holidays. It's actually an incredibly lucrative day, or days, I guess I should say, because both holidays, Christmas and Thanksgiving, are incredibly lucrative for drivers. You're talking about probably about 100% increase compared to normal shifts if you want to base it on a non-holiday normal shift of 4 hours. From my perspective, you got a lot of like huge orders. You're talking $150, $175 food orders that are just substantially large. You could tell that it was definitely for a family of you know, it's at least 6 to 10 people. As expected, the restaurants are so busy. You can often see order times that were hitting nearly 2 hours because the restaurants just don't have the capacity to put it out in 20, 25, 30 minutes like usual. There were a lot of circumstances to where you were just like, hey, it's going to be 30 minutes late. I don't think that it's changing the holidays. I think what you're seeing is a mix of a lot of different things going on at once. I think you have a large portion of the population now, and I'm sort of falling into this category day by day, is that I'm far too busy to do a lot of things that I could normally have done myself. We're all competing against the time part. So if you have family in town and you're running around grabbing these last minute gifts and you've got a lot of last minute errands to do, you don't have time to cook. And what I'm doing and what I think a lot of other Dashers do and what the company does as a whole is simply just say to you, let us take care of something off your plate for you and make it convenient for your life. And then at that point, you can do whatever you need to do that you feel is a higher priority.
That's John Galley, who delivers food for the app DoorDash. There is already a lot of talk about how delivery will change in the coming years. By 2030, there could be entire restaurants that exist only to turn out delivered food, like Domino's Pizza, but for fancier food. And with that could come advances in packaging and portable heating so that gourmet meals can arrive fresh and yummy and plated instead of steamed to death or freezing cold. Don't be surprised if 2030 has drones flying around to houses to drop off burritos and pizzas and other packages. But even more likely is robots. Rolling drones that might detach from a larger truck and scoot right up to the door. This is already happening. Mercedes has a van with robot systems for distributing packages to drones on the roof that then fly the payload home. Starship Technologies out of Estonia has a slow-rolling drone that looks like a cooler on wheels. Other companies are testing drones for hotel room service, no more awkward bathrobe moments. I hate to break it to John Galley, but his holiday delivery paydays may be gone by 2030. Coming up, how traveling and entertaining will change by 2030. That's next as we talk about the holidays of the future on Marketplace Tech. In this world of spread out families, at least half the battle of the holidays is making it home. I grew up in Montana and North Dakota with my family spread across both states, so most of my holiday memories involve some kind of road trip and effort to see everybody at once. Like these people, my stepbrother Mark Dostal and his new wife Tia. When it comes to over the river and through the woods, these two have everybody beat.
Well, most of our family is still back in Helena, Montana. But Tia's mother actually recently moved out to Port Townsend, Washington. So we are expecting a lot of driving and a lot of phone calls and Skypes while driving and while at other people's houses.
Tia, you're going to let him Skype while he's driving?
Well, no, that's probably unsafe. But yeah, well, probably. I mean, the logistics of it will probably require a few phone calls. But I'll be sitting in the passenger seat making those phone calls.
We think our record was one Christmas. We did Christmas Eve at two houses and Christmas Day at four different houses.
What if you had some technology to make this easier? Like what, if you could imagine a specific technology solution, something that would just solve this for you, what do you think that might be?
A teleporter?
I was thinking the exact same thing.
clones would be pretty fantastic to be in two places at once.
Teleporters and clones might not be possible yet, but automakers are working on driverless cars, which could make traffic and Skyping while driving even easier.
But also on the horizon are mixed reality glasses.
This is Amy Webb, founder of the Future Today Institute. She said, in the future, maybe it's okay if you can't be there in person.
Haptic sweaters and haptic fabrics that allow you to feel things through electronic signals that are sent over the internet. So for example, you could sit in the comfort of your own living room wearing a special sweater and a pair of glasses and see your grandmother sitting in her living room wearing a special set of glasses and a special sweater. Those could very well be woven with sensors and different types of materials so that you could send a virtual hug.
Haptic, for the record, is when you get physical feedback from a device. That is, you will feel the sweater hugging you. But as Amy told me, and I have experienced, if you do travel to places, it might not always be great once you're there.
Every holiday season, my family gathers at my home, and we have usually a fancy dinner that my husband cooks, and an all-night poker tournament, and then the following day, we have this brunch. So last year, there's fresh homemade pasta, there's fresh brisket that he has smoked. He's made a pie cakin. Have you heard of a pie cakin before?
Is it cake in a pie or?
Yeah, it's like a turducken, except it's a pie cakin. It's a pumpkin pie Whoa. Baked inside of a chocolate cake that's then garnished.
What?
Yeah, and the food is amazing. There's just one problem. My daughter had brought home from school this horrific bug, this gastro bug that was going around. She got it. I got it. And eventually my uncle and aunt who were staying with us got it. And my father got it.
No.
And by the time that my dad had gotten it, the virus had sort of mutated and gotten stronger. So here we are, New Year's Eve, sitting around this amazingly, gorgeously cooked dinner. And all of us are too sick to eat it. So every holiday has something happens in everybody's family.
Yeah. I have, I think, a story of three holidays in a row where everybody was throwing up, just in a row.
Oh, geez.
So, okay, in the most idyllic version of 2030, what does that holiday gathering look like and how has tech solved some of the sickness? You know, I mean, I feel like we could really tell a story there, right, about how it would get better?
Let's say that I was in that same situation. It's the year 2030. My daughter gets sick at school, but rather than passing that bug along to everybody else, new developments in precision technology and targeted medications that have been designed specifically for her treat that bug in her gut and possibly even treats that bug with her own microbiome and sort of zaps it out of her system so that it doesn't spread once she's around me and my uncle and my aunt, my dad, and everybody else. And through the miracle of, you know, some fairly cool emerging technologies in the medical space, we don't have these horrific holiday stories where everybody gets sick.
Oh, man, I really cannot wait for a hearty helping of precision medicine with my gravy. All right, on to another inescapable and yet endearing part of the holidays. All the songs you hear when you're shopping and the holiday playlist that I, at least, always obsessively create for my dinner parties. Webb, though, has kind of a dark vision of how computer-generated holiday hits could mess with our minds.
If you think about our sort of holiday entertainment, there's a canon of songs that exists that at this point is sort of global, that everybody associates with the holidays, regardless of what religion we are or how we celebrate. Hearing those songs for many people, it makes them feel warm. It gives them a shared experience. In the year 2030, we will have reached a more mature artificial intelligence ecosystem. So it's entirely possible that the memories that we have through music, through movies that get shown every time of, you know, during the holidays every year, that those will wind up being manufactured by smart machines rather than creative people. Artificially intelligent systems will be the ones that determine whether or not and what kind of holiday season we're having. You know, if it's a year where there's been a lot of political strife, maybe the systems will decide that everybody could use sort of a dose of extra optimism.
What power do we have, we consumers, to push us toward the more ideal vision instead of the dystopian version?
Well, you know, the future hasn't happened yet. The future is continually in flux. And the thing that we seem to keep forgetting is that we build the future in the present. The decisions that we make now are what creates the world that we live in, whether that's 3 years from now or 300 years from now. So the onus is on us to build the future that we want to live in and to create the holiday atmosphere that we want for ourselves in the year 2030 and also in the year 3030.
That's Amy Webb of the Future Today Institute. The holidays aren't just about giving gifts and virtual hugs and norovirus to other people. It is also the time of year when people give a lot of money to charity. And the way we give has already evolved a lot from the days of toy drives and bell ringers. And the technology of donating is likely to have an even bigger impact on how much we give and where the money goes. Scott Chisholm is co-founder and CEO of Classy, a fundraising platform for nonprofits.
You know, the macro stat is that $370 billion roughly is donated in the United States alone every single year. It's quite democratized. More people give than vote. You know, the average gift's about $1,000 if you average it out across all of that giving. And when you look at online versus offline, still only 10% of all giving's online and 55% of our traffic comes from mobile devices. So still 90% of giving is done through checks, through cash, and in offline methods. So not only is there a massive shift in online giving, but the shift to mobile is even more rapid.
As you look at that growth in online donation and mobile donation, is that a growth in the overall donor base, or is it a shift of people from offline to online?
It's actually both. Giving has grown pretty consistently for the last 100 years. In times of recession, giving tends to flatline, not decline as much as you'd expect. In fact, what really dries up in those times is a lot of government grants and bigger gifts, whereas what tends to strengthen, which is a little counterintuitive, but it happens, is the grassroots fundraising and smaller gifts. So both the pie is expanding and also the shift to online is growing very rapidly.
So then let's pretend that we're in the year 2030 and these trends continue. How are we donating by then, do you think?
You know, I think giving will become more integrated into everyday life. So let's just, as an example, when you're traveling, maybe you pull up Facebook or Instagram or Airbnb or something like that, and the app actually knows maybe where you're at in the world and what nonprofits are there, so that you can actually give to a local nonprofit as you're experiencing the country.
So that's intriguing. Like, giving will kind of happen in real time based on where you are and what you're doing.
So donors will be able to connect directly to the communities that the nonprofits are serving. So they'll literally be able to, through virtual reality, experience, you know, what it's like in, say, a remote village in Ghana. Pencils of Promise comes to mind, organization out of New York that's working on building schools around the world. And they have a great virtual reality YouTube video already that lets you experience what a classroom is like in Ghana before you even make a donation. And probably the last bucket I'd say is that, like I said, giving will become more integrated into everyday life. And an example there would be, you know, through artificial intelligence and things like Alexa. So hearing about something on the news, say a disaster or something like that, and being able to research and donate through voice commands, you know, while you're cooking breakfast.
Man, that is a detailed and fascinating vision. I love it. The social element, peer-to-peer giving, is there a possibility that people could get donor fatigue, that they could get sort of overwhelmed by, you know, being asked to give to so many individual campaigns, and or that it could affect giving to more established charities?
Absolutely. And it's already happening. And crowdfunding sites like GoFundMe, Indiegogo, et cetera, are great for individual giving, but they've also added to that noise. So for a nonprofit moving forward, it's going to be super, super important to show substance and depth and transparency around their impact so that the folks that are sharing can also share where the money's going, how it's being used. And if you sort of contrast that to individual giving sites, you're giving to an individual and there isn't a whole lot of transparency around where that, how that money's being used post-donation. And I think it'll be critical for the nonprofit space to lead sort of the movement to, you know, let's call it ultra transparency around impact, to actually show before you donate, like maybe through virtual reality, where the money is going to be used, what projects are going to be funded, so that it really builds that trust, not only with the initial donor, but with the people that the donor shares the organization to in their network.
That was Scott Chisholm of Classy. This is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood, and we are talking about the holidays of the future. I don't know about you, but usually around December, I am seized with a sudden desire to go to the symphony. Yeah, sometimes it's the Nutcracker, but the Oakland Symphony, where I live, always does this big performance with guest artists from the community. It's just a time of year to get dressed up and go out and enjoy music, which, of course, led us to ask, how is that going to be different in 2030? Fred Child is the host of Performance Today, a show from American Public Media that features classical performances in studio. Fred, what's going to change about music in the future?
There are some changes that we're beginning to see now that I think by 2030 will be universally adopted. Like musicians, classical musicians even, are reading music from pages, from physically printed pages, less and less. There are page turners out there at concerts who have to physically turn pages for musicians whose hands are busy. You won't see that in 2030. Everybody will be reading music from devices. The page turns today happen with a foot pedal. You won't need that in 2030 because the device you're reading from will hear the music and will just know when to turn the page.
And is that's like a tablet,
yeah,
iPad, some sort
iPads,
of device like,
yeah,
that?
A lot of musicians, a lot of classical musicians, you don't see them unfolding books of music. They just put their iPad out there and they have a little foot pedal and that's what they read music from today. It'll be very similar, but everybody will do it in 2030.
I feel like in 2030, I want it to be it'll be sort of a translucent, you know, it'll look like Lucite, like those really fancy teleprompters where you actually can't see them if you're in the audience.
Yes, right. Like a heads up display. Yeah.
Yes. Amazing. You can see where my loyalties lie in Nerdland. A lot of people go to concerts this time of year. This is, you know, a lot of people get out for that Nutcracker performance that they wouldn't go to any other time of year. How might that change?
I think that'll be very different in 2030. I think all concerts and performances will be pretty much universally available for a fee, of course, in a kind of home-based virtual reality concert hall simulator. So say the Berlin Philharmonic is doing the Nutcracker in Berlin. That will still happen. If you're in Berlin, you can buy a ticket and go. But if you're in, say, Peoria, you'll be able to plug your finger into your personal virtual reality adapter and have the experience of sitting in your favorite seat in Berlin and enjoying the concert. And for a bigger fee, You'll even be able to simulate the experience of, say, playing your trumpet in the orchestra if you play the trumpet. Your virtual reality interface will put you in the orchestra as the concert happens. You'll see the conductor as she cues you for your trumpet solo with the Berlin Philharmonic.
How wonderful. Are there genres, you know, you talked about this incremental change that's happening, particularly in classical music. I think, we've seen, it's hard to find on Spotify.
Yeah.
Are there genres of music or even instruments that are going to go away?
I really don't think so. Not by 2030. That's a generation away. And change happens very slowly in the world of classical music. You know, it's not now music for the masses, generally speaking, but really never has been either. It's kind of a specialized audience. The people who want to find it today and will continue to find it. There has been this debate going on. Are we witnessing the death of classical music? But really, this debate has been going on for centuries. There have always been people in the inner workings of classical music who say, oh, people just don't appreciate it the way they used to, and our audience is going away. In fact, in the 1920s, there were composers in Germany, composers and concert producers in Germany, saying, oh, our audience is getting older and older. By 1940, we won't have any audience left. Well, people found it, and people still find it. People who want to find it will continue to find it. So it's not going away.
How about composing and creating music? I know that, I know computers can now predict what people are going to like. And how much of a leap is it toward those algorithms influencing what's composed or even doing the composition?
Oh, that's a great question. And, people have been working on this for a while. There's a guy named David Cope at the University of California, Santa Cruz, who's been working on this very thing since the 1980s. And over more than 25 years now of work on this, he's come up with some programs that do a creditable job of writing, say, a piano piece in the style of Frédéric Chopin. Or a little violin concerto in the style of Antonio Vivaldi. And it kind of works if you're not listening that closely, but if you do really pay attention, you notice that there's more repetition than a real composer might have done. And there's just not that spark, that human flesh and blood spark of oddity and creativity. And I think until computers gain sentience, until computers become self-aware and self-reflective, we're not going to be in a place where human composers will be fully replaced by computers.
Yeah. Well, and I would imagine in some ways we don't want the technology to get that good, because writing something in the style of Chopin is not inventing something new.
Right.
Right? That feels like something only humans can do, at least right now, and maybe should do in the long term.
Exactly right. And I think a big change classical music is going through is becoming more aware of other styles of music around it. And composers who are trained in classical music also know now about rock and roll and hip hop and R&B and spirituals, and are including all those things more and more into classical music. Beethoven did that. He listened to folk songs and brought those in. Bach did it. All the great composers have done it. And that's a big change that 21st century classical music is going through, and will be even further down that line by the year 2030.
That's Fred Child of the show Performance Today. Coming up, holograms of long-gone family members around the dinner table? It could happen. Next, as we talk about the holidays of the future on Marketplace Tech. We all have entertainment traditions during the holidays. Some of them are classic, some are unique to our families. Me, every year, I sit down and we watch Elf.
So where were you for the last 30 years?
The North Pole.
Can you pass the maple syrup, please?
I didn't put... It's spaghetti.
I think I have something. Yes.
You like sugar, huh?
Is there sugar in syrup?
And then I try to talk my kid out of putting maple syrup on his spaghetti. One year, we even went to Elf the Musical. The less said about that, the better. I also subject my family to our annual tradition, the Christmas story.
Okay, Black Bart, now you get yours.
Ralphie, and a whole lot of basketball. Back in the day, it was usually a Christmas Bulls game.
Chicago and the usual packed house at Chicago Stadium set to cap off their holiday with a unique Christmas night game.
So you see what I'm getting at here. The holidays come with this set of traditions, and movies and sports are part of it for a lot of us. Now, those things are not necessarily going away, but how we watch them, that is already changing. Lemieux Coker is a digital strategist. He has worked at Google, Verizon, and is now at Twitter. And we geeked out a little about what entertainment will look like in 2030.
I think that, you know, things like the Star Wars hologram is going to be more present. Bringing entertainment into a physical space and not just sitting on a screen will be the next level.
What would that look like? You have your own pageant in the house in holographic form?
I mean, that'd be really interesting. Let's say someone had compiled all the video and audio and interviews of Prince, for example. Could you have, say, a holographic Prince performing on your dining room table for you and your friends?
Or,
that'd be really interesting.
Because I want to.
a personal Purple Rain for Molly Wood.
Basically my dream.
Seriously. So things like that, I mean, taking what we're now experiencing on a flat digital screen and bringing that into a physical space, I think is going to be the next frontier for entertainment.
Yeah, the hologram tech has gotten crazy because you're not just talking about celebrities, right? You're talking about, I don't know, passed on relatives?
You know, as I think about family gatherings, looking at the technologies out there, especially around AI, you might have the ability to physically manifest a person, a family member that might have, let's say, passed away from their digital memories that are out there. If you take video, audio, and photos and put them all together, can an AI accurately represent who that person is to bring that person to the family gathering, whether good or bad? I mean, clearly not everyone wants to bring up that memory, but some people might want to have, Uncle Joe telling jokes again in the house. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity for entertainment in the future, but who knows where we're going to be with the way technology is moving forward.
Wow. Well, then, since a lot of entertainment is about gathering together, and of course holidays are too, as that technology comes into the picture, will it bring us together? Or do you imagine that there could be, all of us in our own separate sort of virtual reality headsets?
Yeah, I think that's the downside of it in that the more technology we use, the less we have to engage with other human beings. And things can become less personal. That's something that I am worried about. My wife and I will sit on the couch and tweet together at each other while we're sitting on the couch.
Yep.
But, what will, I think, kids now growing up in this age, hopefully they'll recognize when it's appropriate to have your digital profile or when you need to engage in real life. And I think it's a fine line to walk that I think, as I have a 17-month-old son, like I'm thinking about how to bring him into this digital world that we're all thinking about, that we just need to pay attention to and just be conscious that, there are real people there, real people in front of you. You need to engage them and not just talk to their digital profile.
And then what about leaving the house? I mean, the holidays are traditionally a time when people go to the movies. Mm-hmm. How do you see that changing?
I think there will always be a space for a collective experience. So, for example, there's certain movies that I will personally drive from Brooklyn to Harlem to go to the Magic Johnson Theater to see in that theater, because it's not just the movie, it's the experience you're getting watching the movie.
So what movie are you going to make that drive for?
February 16th, 2018, Black Panther.
Tell me something. What do you know about Wakanda?
Yep.
that oh my God, I am so excited right now. Oh, it's unbelievable. The movie's going to be amazing. But for a lot of situations, I think, who knows what Netflix and all these other content OTT players might do in the next couple of years that further enhances the home entertainment system.
When you look ahead and you think about the holograms at the dinner table and you know, everybody tweeting at each other in virtual reality. Is there any part of that that makes you nostalgic at all?
Yeah. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when you had to call someone's house and probably talk to their parents before you talk to them because the parents pick up the phone.
Yeah.
And I do miss the days of going somewhere without GPS. You know, just getting up and saying, okay, I want to go somewhere and figuring it out. And you tell someone you're going to be there at 3 p.m., you have to be there because there's no way to kind of contact them in the meantime.
Yep.
So I do get nostalgic about those type of things. But, I mean, where would we be without all these things like GPS, things like email?
What do you do with your family over the holidays? Do you have, like, a movie that you always watch or a thing you always make?
I'm relegated to the pies. So it's a sweet potato pie. Or
that's not a bad place to be.
It's not bad, but I've definitely messed up. My first year I made it, I completely forgot to put in eggs. And it was a bad scene. But we collectively get together and just, you know, tell jokes and think about, you know, what happened the past year and talk about what we're grateful for.
Lemu Coker is a digital strategist now working at Twitter. I'm Molly Wood, and this is Marketplace Tech, where we are looking ahead to the holidays of the future. It is party season even as we speak, thinking about what to wear to that virtual Prince concert or the office party or dinner with friends. You might even be thinking about what clothes to try to buy for friends and family, or how to buy them, or where, whether to brave the stores or go online to Amazon or a niche retailer like Warby Parker. Zoe Washington is senior fashion and beauty editor at style website Brit & Co. She also calls herself the chief everything officer at Creative AF, a fashion content consulting company. Zoe, how will these sort of curated spaces shape fashion, or is Amazon going to eat everything?
I think that what you're going to see is a blend between brick and mortar and online shopping experiences, and things are going to get a little topsy-turvy. And you've seen that Warby Parker you brought up is a great example. This is a brand that obviously started online and became known as a sort of online digital darling. But what they did is that they used that experience to really inform how they approached the brick and mortar in-person shopping experience. And I think we're going to see more brands doing that. Glossier is a great example of a beauty brand that, again, generated online and became huge in terms of their Instagram following and their social media presence. They know that people don't necessarily want to go to a beauty counter and have that experience of fighting for the attention of a store clerk, but instead they want to almost go into like a showroom type of experience.
I feel like I should note here that Glossier is a skincare line, which I did not know about until all the cool millennials in LA told me about it.
It's working.
So that's working. Let's talk about tech and fashion. Like, what about picking an outfit? How might that change for, you know, the 2030 holiday party?
I think that you're going to see a lot more of the data-driven offering, but I think that's really going to be something where it's a highly personalized element that is informed by the data.
Well, and I'm fascinated by this idea of sort of the, I don't know, the push notification of clothing, like the idea that we might not even need to pick out our own clothes anymore, or even try them on. Like, maybe I step on a scale and the scale tells Nordstrom what size I need, and my smart mirror says, you know, you look better in like a mint as opposed to a teal. You know, I mean, how much work am I even gonna have to do?
Well, I think the personal element will always be there when it comes to fashion and when it comes to beauty, because it's going on a person and people change their opinions, their body changes, their priorities change, their finances change. But I don't think we're ever going to get rid of the personal element, and I don't think we should. I think that's a good thing. I think that that is going to become the new definition of luxury in the future, how personalized things are and how much expertise is brought into the decision-making process and how much expertise we have at our fingertips. But the service and the one-on-one approach will never go out of style. That has been since the beginning of retail, and it'll be till the end.
How will tech physically change our clothes? You know, sensors and smart fabrics and 3D printing.
I think it's going to really change a lot of things. Rebecca Minkoff is a good example of a company that is trying to sort of see how they can incorporate small wearable technology into their branding. She just unveiled a new bag that's called the Always On Bag. And this bag has a sensor in it that interacts with your smartphone. And what it'll do is when you have the bag with you, it connects to your phone to tell you, hey, you know, you can buy this. This is this discount code just appeared. Or while you're in the store, I might want to recommend the following for you. This fits your profile. And it really is just about them trying to capture those digital emotions that I spoke about. That idea of how do you use your smartphone and how do you connect with the items that you buy.
Okay, but you just opened up a real dystopian possibility here, which is that the smart clothes of the future could advertise to us. That also does not seem like as much of a leap as I want it to be.
I think that at the end of the day, sometimes I worry that the industry, let's like master control top pantyhose before we start having my sweater talk to me. I think when you see that, that's more in the wearable tech environment where, you know, we're talking about an Apple Watch or something like that. But I think in the future, we will see people have a more of an appetite for that.
Let's talk about shopping for gifts, because buying clothes for people is always, it's like the Kobayashi Maru. It is the game you cannot win to try to buy somebody clothes for the holidays. Is all this guessing going to go away?
So yes, I actually think that's where data will really come in handy is the holiday shopping season. It's not so much that the data is going to be, you know, super thorough, but I think we'll have more access to what your mom might like, what she's been liking on Facebook or what she's been, you know, putting in her wish list for on Saks. But I think the revolution in holiday shopping will really be the accessibility of that information in the future. To me, that's where tech really needs to step up the game, because everyone hates the holiday shopping experience. And I really do think that in the future, we might see another holiday pop up. I mean, yes, we have Black Friday and we have Cyber Monday. Who knows what that middle ground is? You already see a little bit of consumer exhaustion on both of those things. So I think in 2030, you might see a completely different holiday of like stay at home and do nothing. Just don't. Like that's the holiday. The holiday is do not do anything.
Oh man, I'm going to start tweeting with the hashtag just don't day, and we're going to make this happen.
Just don't day.
Just don't day.
Just be grateful for the crap you got day.
Seriously. Zoe Washington is an editor at the Style website Brit & Co and the chief everything officer at Creative AF. Zoe, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much.
We have taken quite a little sleigh ride through the holidays of the future, the travel, the eating, the cooking, the togetherness. So I thought I would bring in one of my colleagues to talk about it, Marketplace's Sabri Benishore. He is a man of many fascinating hobbies. He throws ceramics. He grows all kinds of amazing plants and flowers, lots of which show up in the New York Bureau. He is very into health and fitness, and he's a very different type of tech consumer.
Well, yeah, I mean, I am techie, but honestly, probably not in the way that, like, real people are techie. I have like vats of sulfuric acid and copper sulfate solutions in the living room that I, you know, run electricity through to make art. And I have super magnets in the other corner of the living room that are also used to make art.
That is fascinating. Mm. So when the world around you is talking about driverless cars and virtual reality and smart kitchens, are you sort of like, this is not solving my problems?
Well, not my immediate problems, but I actually think the self-driving cars, I think, is fantastic, especially around the holidays. Because honestly, and this is, I mean, semi-joking and semi-serious, I mean, that could end drunk driving, you know? I mean, yeah. Like, let people go and get wasted on the holidays and then just pass out in their self-driving car. I really hope we have that in 2030. I think that will save lives. What about you? What is your favorite thing that you want in 2030?
Oh, man. I mean, I am with you in the sense that I want transportation and logistics to be solved. Like I have long believed in my deepest, darkest heart that I'm going to die in a parking lot.
Oh my God.
That it's just going to be that unromantic, that I'm just going to get run over by some Whole Foods lady
And I want that part of it to get solved. All the people on the road who are just experiencing bad weather for the first time, but also have holiday stress. Like, just no.
Yeah.
Cars, get us there. You know, I want the driverless car to go to the store and have a robot bring all those groceries to the car, and then it all comes back to me, you know?
Yeah,
maybe it's a little dark that I keep saying I want to take out the human element, but I certainly want to take the human element off the road.
100%. 100%. Yep.
And yep. I kind of want the predictive shopping. I'm a little torn on that one. I definitely want the refrigerator that can say, hey, dummy, make sure the robot gets celery because you don't have any in here.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to need it for your stuffing. I want the logistics parts and the remembering part to get out of the way so that I can just enjoy the cooking and the family and the karaoke and, you know, but I don't know if we get both of those at once.
Yeah.
That was Marketplace's Sabri Benishore. And as we played this game, what the holidays of 2030 look like, I know we occasionally stretch the premise a little, but I couldn't help but notice a common theme. The possibility that by 2030, maybe we'll have less tech in our lives, or at least we won't be thinking about it quite so much. I mean, it's obvious that whether the oven cooks the turkey for us or not, it's the time eating with family that matters the most. And if a self-driving car is driving by the house, hopefully it'll have grandma inside. Because I have to be honest, I really don't want to do the long-distance hug thing. Basically, what I'm getting at is tech is gonna tech, but some holiday traditions will never change. The Holidays of the Future was produced with the help of Sean McHenry, Claire Tennisgetter, Catherine Gerardo, and Kristen Schwab. Our engineers are Daniel Powell and Charlton Thorpe, and Stephanie Hughes produces Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood, and okay, I'm sending a big haptic feedback hug to all of them and all of you. This is APM.